Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Yes, indeed. Second half of the program begins right now around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. We are coming to you straight out of Hen House, 6900 West 135th Street. That's the northeast corner of 135th and Metcalf. It is one of our home hen houses, whether it's lunch, grabbing stuff on the way home, or still, I have not gotten my prescription. So you got to remind me.
I will.
I got to go down and get my prescription during one of the breaks.
Yep.
My pharmacy, even right here at this hen house, at 135th and Metcalf, you can get stocked up on everything you need for the big game. Whether it's eats and treats, start at the meat counter. Best cuts of meat around are there. They got great specials going on right now, like fresh beef rump roast. Boneless, $3.99 a pound. You need some lean ground chuck. How about 80% lean, $2.99 a pound, if you're going to get some burgers out on the grill. And, of course, we broadcast right here from the Harry's Brewery, where you've got all the beers you could want. Everything you need for your big party is right here at your neighborhood hen house. Let's start things off in the drill in Charlotte, North Carolina. Travis Hancock is there, WFNZ, 102.5 The Fan. Travis, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you? Hey, don't forget your prescription today, by the way. I wanted to remind you about that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because no one around me is reminding me, that's for sure.
Well,
so
I
appreciate
it. We're friends. I got your back. Yeah, I got you.
You're the man. I appreciate it. All right, North Carolina continues to struggle, continues to have their issues with, you know, getting anything going. But they've got four McDonald's All-Americans that are going to be playing in the McDonald's All-American All-Star game. Listen, there's nothing really wrong other than injuries at North Carolina, or is there more to it than that?
It's injuries, and it's just the fact that last year they lost three seniors and they had 2-1 and done. So, you know, I'm not the greatest at math, but that's five good players leaving the program. They bring in Cole Anthony, stud freshman, obviously, and Baycott, another All-American type freshman. So they have five good players left. They only brought really two good players into the program. Anthony goes out. Baycott struggles. So what are you left with? Now you're left with sort of just secondary freshmen that were filling the roster, grad transfer players. So, yeah, it's injuries, and also just the class they brought in wasn't big enough to make up for all they lost, especially when you factor in Cole Anthony being out. So, yeah, it's the injuries and just overall not having a deep roster like Roy normally has.
Is Duke a legit title contender? The metrics love them. Like the KenPoms of the world love Duke. The AP voters don't love them quite as much. But is Duke a real title contender, or are they a team that's got some flaw like last year's team's inability to shoot?
No, I think they're a legit contender. And I'll kind of quote, we had Jay Billis on our show the other day of ESPN, and I asked him about Florida State. I said, is this the best year for Leonard Hamilton to get a team with the Final Four? He said, this is everybody's best chance. Meaning that, you can make a case for about 25 teams. So certainly Duke had a rough week last week with the loss to Clemson and then the loss to Louisville. Louisville loss isn't the problem, because any given game, Louisville can be maybe the best team in the country when they want to be. The Clemson loss was kind of infuriating, and then you factor in the Stephen F. Austin loss. But then you've got to remember, this team also beat Kansas, as you know, and Michigan State also. So the A game of Duke, when they play their best, it's a national title contender team. At the same time, they play their B or C game, they could be out right away. And I think that's sort of the case, you probably agree, for most teams. Any team that plays their B or C game this year, they could go out right away in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. Or maybe we should say, maybe there is no A game, right? B game's the best anyone's got. If any team can find an A game, they're going to be tough to beat.
And it's almost like too much parity, though, a little bit. It's almost like it's great to have upsets, but when you get to March, I don't want a Final Four where you have a 7 seed, a 9 seed, a 6 seed, and a 5 seed. You kind of need some of the blue bloods to play those teams. And I think that's kind of what makes March Madness special.
Okay. Travis Etienne coming back to Clemson. How stunning was this?
I was scrolling Twitter last Friday, and that came up, and then I stopped in my tracks because that wasn't even a consideration. You just assumed that he was gone along with T. Higgins, the wide receiver from Clemson, and among other players. That is huge. He's one of the most underrated players in the history of the ACC. He's already up there in the record books for a number of running back categories. So for him to come back, I mean, Clemson was going to be legit, as you know, anyway. He's a Heisman Trophy type guy next year. But he's not a dynamic personality that's going to, like, dominate and say things and go viral. He's just kind of a quiet kid. But he's going to have ridiculous numbers next year. So, yeah, kind of flew under the radar nationally because he always does. But, man, that is a massive, massive return for Clemson and really the ACC because they need all the good players that conference can get back.
How pleased are the Hornets with Devontae Graham giving them 19-8? Do they really think they had a kid who could do what he's doing right now for the Hornets?
Well, they traded up to get him. We had the Hornets GM Mitch Kupchak on last week, and I asked him, like, how much has he exceeded your expectations based off of what he thought he could be? And he tried to say that they kind of knew, but I don't think they signed Terry Rozier for $50 million if they know Devontae Graham can do this. But look, he's got to fill Kemba Walker's shoes. No one can do that. So he's going to have little ups and downs. Kemba was basically 20 to 25 every night. He's not going to be that, we know right now. But it's impressive. He's, as of the other day, he was second or third in the league in three-pointer state. And the assist numbers are great. And he's been fun to root for, man. We have him on the show quite a bit. And he's been really special. He just hopes that he can keep it up and sort of – he can't replace Kemba, but he's certainly headed in the right direction to being a huge piece of the franchise.
All right, and finally, any more of an indicator on whether or not the Panthers will come back with Cam Newton, or do they look to trade him?
I think they look to trade him from my gathering and the people I've talked to. I think they look to move on in one way or the other. It's a fluid situation. You know, next week you could hear something different, but from what I gather, they're going to try to move on from Cam. My question is, if they want to try to trade Cam, what is the market for Cam? Because it's not like he played a lot last year. Came off the injury 2 years ago, got injured this year. It's not like he came back end of the year and played well where a team's going to be like, yeah, we see the tape on him. We know he's healthy. He just had surgery not long ago. He can't play football again until the summer or training camp. So when are teams going to be able to evaluate what Cam is? So, yeah, I guess a team like the Chargers, who need a star out there, could be a viable option. That's what Mike Florio's been saying of NBC and Pro Football Talk. But I don't know what they're going to give up for him. I guess a team could say a fifth rounder. But if we're expecting some massive haul for Cam here, I just don't know how that's going to be viable right now.
Travis Hancock in Charlotte. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Thanks for having me. Anytime. Appreciate it.
Scott Seidenberg, ESPN 98.7 in New York City. Scott, how are you, my friend?
It's been an exciting day. I'm doing well.
Yeah, what's the reaction to Eli Manning calling it quits?
It's a day that is emotional for many Giants fans, just looking back on the tenure of Eli Manning. And it's also a day of celebration because this is a guy who was truly the consummate pro and one of the greatest New York sports figures of all time. And just you think about the end of eras that has happened over the past several years. You know, Derek Jeter going into the Hall of Fame this year. Jeter, a lifelong Yankee. Eli Manning announcing his retirement, 16 years along with the New York Giants. And within the next maybe year or so, we'll be saying goodbye to Henrik Lundqvist, who has been with the New York Rangers for 15-plus seasons. So you think about these iconic New York sports figures, and Eli Manning ranks right up there with the best of them.
All right, we don't think they're going quarterback. They took that last year. What are they looking to do with that number four pick?
They need help on the line. It's glaring. They absolutely have to address the offensive line. There's a couple of good tackles that they could have early on in this draft, whether it's Andrew Jackson from USC, the kid from Georgia, who everyone's talking about. There's definitely a need there on the offensive line, and they're going to have to address it. I think it would be a bad move for the New York Giants to go out there and draft a wide receiver like Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb. That is not what they need right now. They need an offensive line to protect Daniel Jones and create the holes for Saquon Barkley. So I think that's the most important need right now.
The Jets are at 11. What are they looking to do?
The Jets, however, should draft a wide receiver. Now, if you can get – Jerry Jeudy's going to be gone because I think he's the most talented wide receiver in the draft. But if a CeeDee Lamb falls down to you, I think you take him. The Jets need playmakers on this offense. Their defense was really solid last year, but you have to give Sam Darnold some weapons to play with. And the Jets, there is some reason for optimism because of how they finished out last season. Schedule aside, you can talk about, you know, how – schedule is weak or whatever, but you got to go out there and win games and beat the opponents that are in front of you. This is the Jets team that lost to two winless teams last year in the Dolphins and the Bengals. So I don't really want to talk about the schedule, but they did finish up strong, and there is reason for optimism. If you can get Sam Darnold some weapons on the outside, they're going to be pretty successful next year.
Luis Rojas in for Carlos Beltran as the Mets manager. Met fans okay with this?
He's a familiar name because not only is this guy, you know, baseball royalty in terms of, you know, Felipe Alou's son, he's voices of his brother, but he's been with the Mets organization since 2007. I know he hasn't coached at the major league level. Last year he was the quality control coach, whatever you want to try to explain his duties last year. He's basically a liaison, but he's been a minor league manager. Like I said, he's been with the organization for over a decade, so people in the Mets organization are very familiar with him. And I think the tipping point, and Brody Van Wagenen, the general manager, talked about this today during the press conference, is that several players reached out and actually pushed for Luis Rojas to get this job after the Mets parted ways with Carlos Beltran. So it was a player-driven decision, and I actually think that's going to benefit them moving forward.
All right, finally, Kyrie Irving continues to be a tease. When he plays, he's really good, but a lot of times he doesn't play, and then he says stupid things in the media. Is he testing the patience of Net fans yet?
I think that this is about frustration, and I don't know if Kyrie's going to admit this, but he has never really been, fans, you know, in Boston, he's never really been the focal point and the leader of a team, right? He's played with LeBron James, and even coming to the Brooklyn Nets, he was supposed to be the second guy to Kevin Durant. You know that Durant's not going to play at all this year, and this is probably a bridge season for the Nets anyway. They're just looking forward to next year and getting both these guys together on the court healthy. But when he makes statements, I feel like it's out of frustration because he has been injured. There's been so much talk about him in the tabloids, whether it's what is the injury? Is he being honest about the injury? What is he not telling us? And also putting this pressure, whether it's fair or unfair, on his shoulders to be the leader and that guy, a role that he probably didn't want or expect when he decided to team up with Kevin Durant and come here. And so when he says things like we're one or two pieces away and then names teammates and then doesn't name others, I think it's just out of frustration. The team is not performing. They're not in a team like Coach Kenny Atkinson said the other night. They're just playing out the strings until next season. And for a guy as competitive as Kyrie Irving, that's got to be frustrating knowing that this year is really not what's important.
Scott Seidenberg in New York. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Anytime. Seattle, San Francisco.
Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN-TV. Roxy, how are you, my friend?
Good afternoon, Saran. How are you?
Very good. How popular, real quick, before we get to the Niners, let's work backwards. How popular is Jared Haase as the basketball coach at Stanford, and what kind of job do you think he's doing?
He's doing a fantastic job this year, Saran. You look at what he's done, for what's much expected, Stanford, at best, maybe pick to come in the middle of the pack. Well, but the former Jayhawk star really has it going now. They're really good defensively. I know they struggled against Kansas. Maybe the lights were a little too bright for them in that game, and it was a good learning experience for them. But I do believe they're a legitimate threat to finish in the top four in the Pac-12. They will be an NCAA tournament team. He's turned the corner with the Stanford program after 3 years that weren't really, I don't think, what he was looking for from Stanford.
Where's Golden State's future sit right now? Are they finding out that guys, even the ones like Draymond Green's not playing that well? Where do they sit on what their plan is moving forward?
The plan is 2021, Saran. That's what it is for the Warriors. They know that this year is a lost year. And essentially, look, Steph will probably come back for some games at the end of the year. It's a redshirt season for Klay Thompson. And they'll get the band together to make another run next year. And they're going to add a high draft pick. More than likely, it's going to be a top five pick, considering how poorly this team is playing. And so they'll add another piece to this. I do expect D'Angelo Russell to get moved. He just hasn't really seemed to fit with what they're doing. And Draymond Green, when he's at his best, Seren, when he is the ultimate glue guy. Now you're looking at him and they need him to score. That's not his role. When you have Steph, you have Klay. When you have another score, when Draymond can be the defensive stopper, the rebounder, the hustle guy, that when he's at his best, he just doesn't fit with a bad team. And that's why I think people are, oh, well, Draymond Green maybe has hit his ceiling. No, I just think it's because the talent around him isn't very good this year.
Yeah, I mean, there was talk that a deal for, I'm trying to blank, the Kentucky kid that went to the Lakers, Anthony Davis. There was a deal working for Anthony Davis to go to the Warriors, but they were balking at giving up Draymond Green. Oh, my Lord. Oh. I mean, there's more than that.
I don't know how much truth there was to that one. I really don't. I mean, there's all these rumors and innuendos out there. I'm not necessarily buying that because, look, if it's going to be a huge boost to the team, and certainly getting AD would have been for the Warriors and Bob Myers, the GM, I think they would have done it. They're not steadfast. They can't move this piece or that piece. And if you put AD with those two in the backcourt, wow. I mean, the Warriors are making another run at it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I think it was like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, and they were like, yeah, that's too much. I'm like, oh, I don't know, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and, you know, even if Durant didn't stick around. All right, let's move to the 49ers. How confident is San Francisco in this game? Is there big talk, big hype? Do they think the spread's right? Where's the confidence level there in the Bay Area?
Well, the confidence Seren is very high. With the way the Niners dismantled both Minnesota and Green Bay in their two playoff games, and there's a lot of momentum with the Niners, they believe. And when you look at how they were able to dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides, that is the big key for this team. And they know going into this game, they're going to have to run the football a lot. And they know that Kansas City knows that. And it's going to come down to all right, can the Niners establish the run? Can they keep Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense off the field? And if the Niners can do those things, they feel really confident about their opportunity to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I get it. We'll find out when they get there. Jimmy Garoppolo, good enough if they need him to bring him back from 10 down?
I think so. And I think he's proved that with some of the games. You look at the Rams game toward the end of the year, the Saints game as well. And in the first two playoff games, he wasn't asked to do much, right? Just don't screw it up. And he didn't. And the Niners were just able to chew it up on the ground with their three running backs. And it appears that all three will be available for the Super Bowl. And Tevin Coleman, who did injure the shoulder in the game against Green Bay, is back in a limited duty and practicing, but they anticipate having him back. And it's been a great mix between Breida and Mostert and with Coleman. And that's what I think the Niners are banking their offense on. And, yes, they have the weapons with Kittle and Samuel, who's really emerging, and certainly the trade for Sanders helped the offense. And the other thing that shouldn't go unnoticed, Seren, is that McGlinchey and Staley, the two tackles, missed a significant amount of time during the course of the season. I think they're a lot fresher right now than they would have been had they played every game, and I think it's benefited the Niners' offensive line.
Yeah, Chiefs had some guys that have been banged up, too. We know what that's like. We see how much better this team is once they started getting some of their hurt guys back, and Dee Ford was hurt and came back. So I think we might be getting best against best. Hopefully we get a great game when it's all said and done. Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, Seren. Talk to you soon.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota.
And Matthew Caller, score 1500 in Minneapolis. Minnesota's next. Matthew, how are you, sir?
I am doing really well. How about you?
Not bad. I'm curious. Let's start with the OC that's leaving the Vikings, Kevin Stefanski. Why on God's earth would you take the Browns job with all of the qualifications that came with it? I mean, was this guy just that desperate that he thought this would be the only job he'd ever be offered?
Well, you know, I do think that when a job comes up to be a head coach in the NFL, even if it's not the best job in the world or not ideal, you want to take it if you're a guy that's been ladder climbing for a really long time. I mean, what job comes up where they fire a previous coach is going to look perfectly shiny and beautiful. Like, there's a reason why the last guy got fired, right? Because there's probably some issues with that organization. And I understand that he's going to have to make some concessions on things for the way that the organization wants to be done. But that's kind of Kevin Stefanski's career, is finding ways to work with lots of different people. I mean, this is the guy that was in line to be the offensive coordinator, and then the Vikings hired Gary Kubiak to come work with him, and they still had a top 10 offense this year, and those two worked together really, really well. He worked really well with Pat Shurmur when Pat Shurmur was in Minnesota. So, you know, I actually do think it's a pretty good fit for Stefanski, especially the fact that they have a quarterback in place that we know has a lot of talent, but maybe hasn't maximized that yet. The one thing I'd be concerned about is it's the Cleveland Browns, and there's just never-ending drama. I think he's going to find that it's a little bit different than the organization he just came from in Minnesota, which has been very sound for quite some years.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. You know, I think there's a great phrase: make sure you're running to something and not running from something. And that would be my next question. Is he running from that, you know, situation where he had Gary Kubiak over his shoulder? Was he not comfortable with that? And so he's just taking the first vine that could get him out from under that situation.
No, I think he was comfortable with it. And those two really had a good rapport. And it is interesting because they brought also Kubiak's son, Clint, and he worked with the quarterbacks. And they brought Rick Dennison, who had worked with Gary Kubiak basically everywhere he had ever gone. So it wasn't the easiest situation for Stefanski working with a bunch of Kubiak's guys, and yet they found a way to work really well together. And on and off the record, everybody who was around that offense said, yeah, it was kind of the best chemistry that, you know, an offensive staff had in a while, and a huge change from 2018 where John DeFilippo wanted to dictate absolutely everything. And the biggest part was that they just figured out what worked well for the quarterback. And you guys know this, that, you know, as talented as someone like Patrick Mahomes is, it certainly helps to have a perfect system for him to play in with Andy Reid. And with Baker Mayfield, I'm not so sure that Freddie Kitchens was getting the most out of him. And Kirk Cousins in 2018, they definitely weren't getting the most out of him. And Kevin Stefanski found a way to do that, and I think he could carry that over. So, you know, I don't think that he was running away from this situation since it was working out. I think it was more of just one of those things where, when the opportunity comes calling, even if there's some risk involved, you can't turn it down. Plus, probably made him a lot richer, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, hey, listen, I'll take millions to go do whatever you need someone to do. I'm with you on that front. All right, so let's turn and say, how does things change for the Vikings with Gary Kubiak? And is Kubiak a Kirk Cousins fan? Because that decision, you would think, I mean, maybe Cousins wants to play it to free agency. That's how he played it last time with the Redskins. But you would think if they're committed to Cousins, they might want to extend him in this offseason. How does Kubiak and Cousins fit, and what's Cousins' future?
So those two seem to get along really well. And if you're Kirk Cousins, you have to be thrilled with Gary Kubiak staying, because Cousins had the best season of his career, whether you look at quarterback rating or yards per attempt or what our friends at the Pro Football Focus said about Cousins' season. It was the best year he's ever had, and I think Kubiak's system was just a perfect fit, trying to get him to throw the ball downfield, running the ball to set up, you know, second and shorts that can allow for play actions and things like that. You know, it really worked super well for him, and I think Kubiak is just a guy who generally knows how to get the most out of people and knows how to deal with people. Everyone that I've talked to, whether it's current or former players who dealt with Kubiak, say he's just the perfect guy to work with. Like, he has a great demeanor, and I think that really helped Kirk Cousins as opposed to butting heads with John DeFilippo the year before. So I'm sure that he's pretty happy that Kubiak is going to stick around. But as it pertains to the extension, it is really hard to figure out what anybody's thinking. I mean, the guy had a good season, a great season, but it reminds me a lot of the situation you had there in Kansas City, where, you know, Alex Smith was just so good and probably couldn't get you over the top, and you decide to draft a quarterback, everybody criticizes you, but you end up with, you know, the best quarterback in the NFL. Now, that's a hard situation to repeat, but the Vikings might be looking at it and saying, Kirk can only get us so far. Kirk might be looking at it and saying, I could get a heck of a lot more money somewhere else probably if I hit the free agent market again. And he strikes me as the type of guy that wants to absolutely maximize every single dollar he can get. So it is a super fascinating situation. I don't know that Kubiak's hire says a whole lot either way, whether he would stay or whether they would sign him to an extension.
All right, Josh Donaldson, 4 years, $92 million. Does this put the Twins over the hump?
Not quite, but kind of. I mean, there's going to be a lot of dingers, I think, going out of that stadium. I mean, Kansas City pitching might have some more issues this year against this Twins lineup. I mean, now you go position to position, and it seems like every guy has 30 to 40 homers, and as long as they keep juicing those baseballs, this could be the number one lineup in baseball. Where it really helps is fielding at third base. They were an atrocity at third base last year with Miguel Sano there, and now they have one of the best fielders in the entire league. So I think it helps the pitchers as well. But still, Homer Bailey right now, I think, is your number three starter or your number four starter. I mean, that doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence when other teams have Zach Greinke and Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole. I mean, you know, the other teams in the AL have superstar pitchers that you're going to have to match up Jake Odorizzi and Jose Barrios against. Even if you have one of the best lineups, I think they still have to improve by getting one more pitcher. Maybe we see that somebody emerge throughout the year that's a prospect, or maybe we see a trade at some point. But that still should be a major priority, even though this Donaldson move, I think, is a very, very good one.
And Timberwolves management says they're not going to trade Karl-Anthony Towns. Should they be breaking this nucleus up, whether it's him, the other pieces? What does this team need to do to get up to a that next level, that true championship contending level?
Man, I wish I had an answer, but this entire franchise's history is them not having any answers for getting to that next level. It's amazing. I mean, the fact that you have Karl-Anthony Towns is one of the most efficient offensive players in the NBA, and you can't seem to make the pieces fit around him. I mean, at some point, because basketball is what it is, you do look at the star player and say, okay, what is it about this guy? And, you know, defense might be the biggest thing. And just a general lack of toughness and effort and hustle and those sort of things that I think cost you in little ways throughout a game that result in a lot of losing, because we just keep blaming the supporting cast over and over and over again. So I don't think that they will trade him. But if it was me, I would be listening to some offers. I also think the idea that Andrew Wiggins was ever going to be different was hilarious from the beginning and has proven to be ridiculous, that they ever thought somebody who's been in the league for this long would suddenly, because he gets a new coach, change his attitude, change his demeanor and his consistency. So, you know, I do think that some big changes have to happen here. And, you know, now Gerson Rosas, who's the president of basketball operations, he's had a good amount to look at it and to see, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do see some big trades.
Matthew Caller in Minneapolis, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Feel good!
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was there for Montana Magic at Arrowhead.
Back to pass, Montana. Cocks his arm. Looks right. No one there. Looks left. Throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Yeah! Joe Montana has done it again!
He was there for the drought breaker in Houston.
Miles Davis starts the playoffs with a bang! 106 yards! Touchdown, Chiefs!
And he was there for everything in between.
And it's crazy. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It's a terrific grace, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, the humanity.
No one knows the Chiefs better. He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Yes, indeed. Adam Teicher covering the Chiefs since 1994. He joins us here on our Sprint guest line to talk a little bit about the Chiefs in this bye week. Before we get going, Adam Teicher's appearance brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. It is time. There's a floor model sale going on right now. It's cold. You're stuck downstairs. No problem. Just make sure you got that ultimate man cave, whether it's pinball, whether it's video games, whether it's shuffleboard, pool table, poker table. They have got you covered. I have Family Leisure, the bar stools, theater seating. They got it all for your man cave. And right now they've got the floor model sale going on at Family Leisure. K10 and Ridgeview. I am looking to get a poker table. That's what I want to get over at Family Leisure. That is my next purchase. You cannot help but find a million things you would love to have when you walk into Family Leisure at K10 and Ridgeview. Adam Teicher with us on our Sprint guest line. Adam, how are you?
Good, Sven. How are you doing today?
Very good. No complaints. Just enjoying, the week off before my football team plays a Another game. What do you think about how it's going so far for the Chiefs during this, first week of preparation?
Yeah, I mean, probably about as well as you can be. It can be as can be expected. Looks like Chris Jones didn't have any setbacks, so. And he was talking about being 1,000% sure that he would have a better role, a bigger role on Super Bowl Sunday than he did in the AFC Championship game. So it looks like the Chiefs are going to have everybody ready to go for the 49ers.
All right. How close to 100% are we expecting Chris Jones to be?
I don't know if it'll be 100%, but, he was productive against Tennessee without being 100%. So, I think he'll get more snaps. He got, 28 of a possible 66, something like that, against Tennessee. And I would expect that percentage number to go up in the Super Bowl. So I think he'll play well, and Chiefs need him to.
What about Kelce? We know he was just precautionary with the knee. And then he ends up grabbing a hamstring in the game. Where's your concern level with him?
Yeah, well, it's always a concern level when a guy misses practice. He's played through this stuff. He played well against Houston, as we know, and played the full game against Tennessee. So I'm looking for Kelce to be Kelce and contribute in a big way. He's going to have to. I think if the Chiefs are going to win.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it makes you a little bit nervous when the guy's not practicing, I think you just rather see him out there. But I'm not going to worry about it. He played and played at a super high level last go-around. How do you think Andy Reid's dealing with all the questions, the not winning the big one? How's his temperament?
Yeah, so far so good, I think. It's to be expected that he's going to get those questions this time of year. It's going to ramp up even more next week when the Chiefs get down to Miami. So he's just going to have to deal with that until he wins one. And that's how that goes, I'm sure he doesn't like those questions, but that comes with the territory when you coach as long as he has and hasn't won one. So he's overdue, and he's just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, no, I think he's actually doing a really good job. I think he's at peace with the fact that not necessarily that it's okay if he doesn't win. I've heard people say that. I think, when he talked about, there are things more important, in life than winning a Super Bowl and all that, people are taking that as, he's just come to grips with the fact that he may never win it. I think he's come to grips with the fact that he can't possibly not win it as long as he's got Patrick Mahomes. Therefore, the confidence level is off the charts.
Yeah. And the other thing with Andy Reid, I've talked to some people for a story I'm working on. He just enjoys the process of coaching more than I think most other guys do, most other coaches do. And I don't mean he doesn't want to win. I don't mean it in that respect. But he just likes the process, the daily grind. He enjoys leading people, and he enjoys innovating on offense, and he enjoys designing a game plan. He really likes that stuff. And so I think you can last longer and stay fresher when you really come to work every day enjoying the grind, enjoying the process, as opposed to you're just in it for the wins and for the victories. So I think there's a component of that to Andy Reid as well, that he appreciates being here and certainly wants to win, but he just enjoys the daily grind.
Do you think that Jimmy Garoppolo can throw for 320 and a couple of touchdowns if he needs to, or does this game have to be won by the 49er defense?
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be a lower scoring game than that. I don't see the 49ers keeping up if this game gets to a certain point. No, I don't think he can. I think the Chiefs will give him too many problems. So, yeah, I think the 49ers, it's on them to keep the score at a, into the whatever, low 20s, mid 20s. I mean, if it gets beyond that, you think the 49ers can score with the Chiefs? I don't know. Not the way the Chiefs have been playing lately on defense. I don't see that. So, we'll find out. But I think it's going to have to be a different kind of game for them.
I think if the 49ers get into the 30s in this game, they've done so with, like, defensive scores.
Yeah,
or maybe special team scores.
Yeah, or the Chiefs are turning it over deep in their own end, and they have an easy, you know, short field for a touchdown, that kind of thing. I agree with you. I don't think they're gonna go up and down the field on the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's not to say that the 49ers can't win. They can win, and I think it's a fairly even game. I just don't know that they can get away with the victory. Like, you know, we're not worried about a 7 or 8 point spread and covering that, right? It's pretty much whoever wins is going to cover the spread. I just feel like any close game, the Chiefs are going to win. I don't see Garoppolo. I think Mahomes has advanced to the point that not only if he gets the ball with 3 minutes, will he go down and get the 3 or the 7 that they need, but he'll take up whatever time he needs to take up to make sure Garoppolo can't go down there. Like, I think for the 49ers to win, they got to get a couple of scores up, because if it's one score, and by the way, we know the Chiefs have never lost a game by a couple of scores with Patrick Mahomes. If it's one score, Mahomes will find a way to win.
Yeah, I think everybody believes that, and you know, that's a powerful thing when everybody on a sideline believes that's going to happen. And who knows, maybe the 49ers believe that's going to happen. You know, to me, the key is kind of whether the Chiefs can protect Mahomes, because I think if they can block for him, the 49ers are going to have a tough time keeping up with the Chiefs' speed. I think that's going to be a real problem for San Francisco. You know, Richard Sherman can't cover everybody. So I see a big day for Mahomes if the Chiefs can keep him protected. I don't know that the 49ers have a huge path to victory if they can't get a lot of pressure on Mahomes consistently. If it's you know, they're not doing that, it's going to be a long day, I think.
No, I agree wholeheartedly on that. Is guard-to-guard where the Chiefs are most susceptible? I mean, I think Wisniewski's done a nice job solidifying the left guard spot, but if I'm the Niners, that's where I'm trying to get to Mahomes, is right up the middle.
Yeah, and you're wondering what, you know, they have so many guys they can line up in those spots, and you wonder maybe that's, you know, whether they do something with D4 to kind of get him matched up in the middle there at times. So, yeah, it's going to that's going to be a fascinating chess match, how the 49ers do all that, whether they try to do it with 4, whether they blitz a lot, how they line up like that, and how the Chiefs combat all that. That's going to be the probably the chess match that determines the game.
Are you as big on Kyle Shanahan as so many people are nationally?
Yeah, I like Kyle Shanahan. You know, you look what happened in Atlanta while he was there and then after he left, and I think that's a pretty good indication of how valuable he is. And I do like Kyle Shanahan, and I think him having that Super Bowl experience, that big game experience, even if it was just the one Super Bowl, I do think, you know, he that maybe negates Andy Reid's experience in this game. So I think you know, I'm looking for a good match between these two. And I think this is a great matchup. I think there's so many elements of this that really are going to make for a close game. I don't see either side getting up big.
You've been there for the questions, and when the subject of the Chiefs' run defense comes up, the line of questioning turns to how this is a different kind of 49er running game than maybe the power run game that they've been playing at playing against, you know, in the past. What? I mean, is this run game scare you any more than the Titans because it is more halfback based than say a power run game?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I thought Steve Spagnuolo had some interesting comments about that. He was just talking about how, you know, the 49ers try to kind of get the defense moving sideline to sideline, and then you know, it's the cutbacks that he's really worried about, and they have some guys who can run. I mean, Breida and Mostert and you know, those guys are kind of fast. I mean, they're you know, that's their speed thing. With the Chiefs, it's a wide receiver. So, you know, that is something to watch. And, you know, are they going to make a big play out of that and turn the game? You don't know, but I think that's a possibility. So I do think that's a concern for the Chiefs. And, you know, they did such a great job with Derrick Henry, particularly later in the game last week. You wonder if they're up to this kind of challenge now. I think they are, but we'll find out.
Yeah. No kidding. All right. By the way, are you well, let's see. I'm trying to think the days. So when what do you think the scheduling for what they've got going on as far as all the media affairs, what do you think, if anything, that does to affect the Chiefs preparing?
You mean down in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do all the media crush and all that. Andy Reid does, you know, he gets annoyed by the handful of media. You know, not annoyed, not big time. You know, I mean, for the most part, he's fairly playful for it. But he gets irritated at times, and it's clear he doesn't want to spend much more than a handful of minutes around us. He's got a ton of different media obligations he's going to have to do. How much does that get in the way of him getting the team ready?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, it's a distraction, and I kind of like how he approached this week. You know, they've kind of had their game plan practices already. He said they pretty much have the whole game plan in, and that's pretty interesting. I didn't know he would approach it that way, but that tells you, or that tells me at least, that he doesn't think they can get great work done down in Miami. You know, it's going to have to be more refresher type stuff than hey, here's the game plan. I didn't know how he would approach that, but so it's interesting that, you know, he's not doing that. So that tells me, yeah, that he's not expecting them to get great work in down there, and they're going to be distracted by all that stuff.
All right, do you think they'll get tired of waiting around?
I'm tired of waiting around. I mean, let's play the game. You know, last week was such a fun week. You know, like there was so much anticipation about what was going to happen in that AFC Championship game, and that was one of the funnest weeks I've had. Not even counting about talking about Sunday. That's one of the funnest weeks I've had since I started covering the Chiefs. Just all the anticipation and all that, and what people were thinking about what might happen on Sunday. And this week has just been kind of the opposite, you know. It's, they're practicing, but no game, and it's just kind of been a dead week in that regard. I don't necessarily sense the energy from the fans right now. I'm sure that'll ramp up, but it is kind of weird, having to wait 2 weeks. But I'm sure they'll be ready to go once the Super Bowl Sunday comes.
All right, let's get to our final four with Adam Teicher, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. They've got an ortho urgent care that's open 7 days a week. Also proud to receive the 2019 Prestigini Guardian of Excellence Award for patient experience. Learn more by visiting kcoi.com or calling 913-319-7633. Adam, I'll begin you with this. Are you taking your trunks?
I will. Don't know if I'm going to get to use them, but, they're coming. Already passed, right, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, good to know. I heard Miami wanted to know, so that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Very good.
I'm surprised Eli Manning, you want to know, though.
I had people asking me, you know, hey, is Tyson taking his trunks?
Well, so I was passing along. Doesn't surprise me.
Eli Manning, Hall of Fame, yes or no?
If I had to vote, I would say no. I just look at what he's done, and I don't see a Hall of Fame career. I see a couple great games at the ideal times, but I don't see a career that's worthy of being with, you know, a Joe Montana or a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning. I just don't see it. So if I would vote, I'd say no, but I think he will get in. Yes, I do think he'll get in.
Kareem Hunt arrested today, possession of marijuana. Does he ever have a 1,000-yard season again?
Not a 1,000 yards, no. I'm wondering what his NFL future is right now. I mean, I'm sure he'll get a job and he'll play, but I don't know that anybody's going to trust him with a starting job. So if I had to guess, I'd say no, not a 1,000 yards.
All right, and finally, not win, just play in. How many Super Bowls does Patrick Mahomes play in a Chiefs?
Play in. Okay, he's 30 or 24. So let's just say he plays until he's 15 more years, I'll say. I'm going to give him, I think conservatively, four more after this one.
Four more? Five total.
Does that sound right to you?
It does. It does sound right to me. Sounds like it's just the right number. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that's the number that I've had in my head. And we've had the discussion. If you could have John Elway's career out of him as far as Super Bowls go, five appearances, two wins, would you bank it right now? right? That's kind of the genesis of this.
No, don't. Go for it, you know. Yeah. I think with what the Chiefs have offensively, go for it. I mean, I would take my chances on that. No, I don't think that's good enough. From where we're standing right now, that does not look good enough to me.
All right, Adam Teicher, you'll see him down in Miami looking good in a Speedo. Make sure you get there, folks. You don't want to miss that. That's how he rolls. Adam, great stuff, buddy. I'll see you in Miami.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week, Mr. Man.
All right, sounds good. Adam Teicher from ESPN does a great job covering the Kansas City Chiefs. Adam, brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. The floor model sale is going on. Listen, you're going to be cooped up in the basement for another couple of months. Make sure you got some things to do. All kinds of great stuff for your basement. Your man cave is there, and their floor model sale going on at K10 and Ridgeview. Find them online at familyleisure.com. We'll talk a little more Chiefs next here on the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I don't know. I don't know.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. What was the first team to win a Super Bowl while being outgained in yardage? It was the 49ers on this date in 1982. It only happened once in the first 29 years that a team won the Super Bowl while being outgained, the Niners. It has happened 12 times in the last 24 years.
Wow. 50-50.
It's 7 of the last 11.
Okay. All right. Good to know. What are we playing for there, Curtis? I forgot.
Playing for?
Jazz. Cajun food from Jazz, Louisiana Kitchen. You can get stocked up for the big game right here at your neighborhood hen house. We got another hour, fourth quarter of the program. Coming up next, we begin it. I can't think of a better way to do it than Kevin Harlan, right? We're surrounded by beer, people, real beer. It's on the Kansas side. We're in the Harry's Brewery section. You can get all the beer, all the eats, all the treats you need for your big party at your neighborhood hen house, just like I do when I'm stocking up for my big festivities. Get to your neighborhood hen house today. Kevin Harlan, next.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, 14 players have had a pick six in a Super Bowl. How many have done it for the losing team? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.